I am Shusara Kona Kumara. Welcome to Satsang. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us for Satsang tonight. We're going to go ahead and get started, so take a nice deep breath and I will clear the space. Mother, Father, God, through the Great Central Sun Hierarchy, through the Office of the Christ, through the Order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, Keeper of the Violet Flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light, one to surround each of us, and I ask that they be brought to the center of the earth where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. And now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it.
Very good. Okay. Good evening. Good to be with you again. Pielian. Don't laugh. You're smart. Don't laugh. What do you think about what's been going on since last week, energetically speaking, since you are pretty tuned in to what's moving?
Since last week. I feel like there's something very heavy sort of lingering. I feel like it's bringing up, like the energy of it feels like it's bringing up all of like your past stuff, but like regrets, shame, but also linked to like, what do you believe in? What do you stand for? Mm-hmm. What are you gonna fight for?
That's good. That's good. Yeah. Let's start with that then. So in this level of advanced spiritual work. It's a very interesting line that we have to walk. We walk on one side from the space of kind of, you know, mastering this paradigm of opposites, right? And you're here as seeker to literally master being here. So that is a more of a psychological process, really, than what you would think of as a spiritual process, right? Simultaneously, we're also being called to view everything that's going on here from the highest light, yeah, from the highest level of truth that we've been subjected to so far or introduced to so far, even if you haven't integrated it personally. You're still being asked to hold that and do your absolute best to function from that in everything. So here's an interesting paradox, huh? Like, it's like on one side, I'm supposed to live kind of above the world, but simultaneously master being here and living here in the world. And it does seem very paradoxical. And it's an interesting thing because as a guide, you know, depending where they're where they're at, yeah, in their journey, my guidance to them will look very different, right? So sometimes my guidance seems very grounded in the world, and like you're saying, what do you want to fight for? So for me to actually promote and encourage you to stand up for yourself in a certain way and to fight for, you know, what is in your best interest or for you, your children's best interest, may seem like, well, that seems to be contradictory to what we would think we would need to do, because if the whole thing is to see through it and you're telling me to fight, right, that seems highly polarized. And is it highly polarized? Well, of course it's highly polarized, right? But in this paradigm that you're being asked to master, it serves its place. And so if we look specifically, say, at your personal stories, we don't need to get into them other than to just say that part of your journey has been exactly that, to learn to stand up and fight for your children, fight for yourself in areas where you've been wronged. Yeah. Because the patterning as it was imprinted for you doesn't want to fight. The patterning wants to say, well, we can just let this one slide by, right? And it's okay. It's all right. It'll work itself out, or, you know, it's not worth fighting for, or it'll be too much hassle to go there. And so for you, one of the best pieces of guidance you could get is, no, stand up and fight, right? Because you have to push past the patterning. And this is a component that people don't understand until you're really doing very advanced work. It just doesn't seem to make sense. Because that's what someone who's starting on the track of Advaita, let's say, you know, non-dualism, would see that and be like, well, what kind of guide are you? You're telling me to be polarized, right? It wouldn't make any sense. But for the seeker that's been in long enough and has really grounded the understandings in, which you have, at that point, now we have to kind of go back into the world. And now let's start taking a good hard look at where you're still stuck, right? So in your case, that was part of it, still being stuck in the old patterning of being complacent and not wanting to ruffle feathers, not wanting to be that loud voice in the quiet room, so to speak, because that's the piece that has to be pushed through. So remember, just seeing the patterning, seeing the story at play is not enough to dissolve it. It is not enough to dissolve it. I don't know how many times I'll have to say that over my lifetime, but it'll be a lot, because that's where we get so stuck. Well, I've already processed this, right? I've already seen this before. I've seen this 1,000 times. I've worked on this over and over again, and it's still kind of coming up. Well, yeah, because you've done some mental work around it, but what have you done to change it in your world, right? And that's where push comes to shove for most seekers, it's one thing to get in and to, you know, do the challenging work of being super honest with ourselves, super objective about what we see running, being able to see into a level of the unconscious where we're actually witnessing things that we would rather not witness about our own psyche. That's one thing. And now to take what we've seen and to take the understandings that we carry and to apply them in your life is a totally different level of work and far more challenging. It's hard enough to see, right? But far more challenging to make the changes. And people know this in their lives anyway, right? Because so many people say, oh, I want to learn the guitar, right? Or I want to start my own business. I want to, pick something. But you could start with a lot of gusto, but let's say you want to learn the guitar and maybe the first, you're a female, you want to learn the guitar. And let's say maybe the first hurdle for you to get over is the fact that you've got to cut your fingernails. Right? It seems very minor, but for a lot of women, that would be a huge deal. Oh, so it's like, how bad do you want it? Is it worth me, you know, cutting my fingernails and feeling like now I'm not as attractive as a female in order for me to play the guitar? So there's a hurdle you have to get over there. Okay. And then the next hurdle. So I have to deal with, I've been playing for a week and a half and now I have blisters on my fingers. Now what? I'm in pain, right? So now we're in pain. And so now what do? Do we just stop playing altogether? And maybe you do. Maybe you say, well, so I'll take a little break so my fingers can heal. Okay, so you take your break. And then the break is long enough that by the time you get back to it, you've lost everything you gained to begin with. And now you start over from the beginning and you get back to your blisters. And now what are you going to do? You cut your fingernails again, get back to your blisters. And then what do? Now you got to push past that hurdle. Learning to play through the pain, right? Learning to play and watch your fingers bleed, because that's the reality for serious guitar players. Okay, then what? Well, then say you've been practicing for 6 months or a year and you recognize, like, I'm not where I thought I'd be. And I'm not, I'm not Jimi Hendrix. I'm not the Edge. I'm not picking the guitarist. I'm not that person. And so now it's like, so why are you doing it? Why are you doing it? Are you doing it because you need to compare yourself to another? Or are you doing it for the pure joy of the experience, for the pure joy of learning and expanding, right? And that's the greatest hurdle of all, to come to peace with what is. So my fingers are short and fat. And I'll never have the reach of a great guitar player, right? I'll never have the dexterity and the speed of a great guitar player. Does it mean I quit? Right. So we were like, I was watching last night with my daughter, Kate. I was helping her with her viola. And so I put on, one thing leads to another on YouTube. We start looking at viola players. And then we end up looking at all these like child prodigies. So there's this 3-year-old violinist playing in this concerto in front of this huge, it was just crazy, you know, and all these little kids playing the drums, it just, at this level that is unfathomable to me. And a 4-year-old piano player, you know, like, and so the average person, what do? We look at that and we're like, why bother, right? Why even bother if there are people out there who are that good and it's like they don't even have to work for it. And so this is the challenge. Now take what I'm saying, which is they're all very worldly experiences, but now apply them to your spiritual work. And you'll see it's the same thing, right? So as you do your work, you have these understandings, and now you're being asked to apply them in your daily life, and you're going to come up against the same challenges. So I'm Pielian, and one of my biggest hurdles to get through is complacency and feeling like I hate confrontation and I run from confrontation and I'm afraid to speak my mind. I'm afraid to fight for myself. So you have to ask the same questions. Well, how important is it to you to transcend this world? I mean, and if you really look at it, this is what we're looking at as a seeker. Now, of course, if you're trying to learn the guitar, that's not the ultimate question. But as a seeker, this is the ultimate question. How important is it to you to transcend the requirement of coming back again after this physical lifetime is over. Because right now you're stuck in it. You're absolutely trapped and enslaved here in this paradigm. So if you're a seeker and you say you want out, well, what is it going to require? It's going to require you to push and fight through every single bit of patterning that you've got. And what that does look like in the outside world is it's a battle, right? Because on one side, you have the patterned behavior, which is comfortable. You might hate it, right? You might consciously hate it. Oh, I hate that about myself. But it's comfortable because it's what you've always known, right? On the other side, you've got what you can be, the capacity to go beyond it. And literally, it's as if you have the level of the ego, like duking it out with the divine you, your divine will that sits there and says, no, we can do this, right? We can do this. And so you will witness times where it literally will feel energetically just like there is a war waging inside of you. And it does feel energetic. I mean, there are times where it's like you can cognize that everything I understand says I need to do this. Like everything I understand, and I see it, it's so clear. Here's all I have to do, just do that. But then like the energy of it, it's like tearing you up inside because you're like, I don't know if I can bring myself to do that, right? And it is a battle that's being fought. And who's gonna come out the victor, you know, is completely up to you ultimately. Not from the level of patterning, but from the level of the higher you that can see everything that's at play and understands that the only way out is through it, right? That's one of the, to me, the most crucial pieces of teaching is that the only way out is through it. And that's one place that I think so many light workers get so stuck, right? Because they learn to meditate, they learn to, you know, utilize invocation and prayer, whatever else, and it feels good and they feel uplifted and they feel as though they're in their hearts and isn't it beautiful, but they get so stuck there, right? And the common misperception is that if I just stay here, that's all I need to do. And that is so inaccurate, right? So inaccurate. If we're just going to sit in meditation and that's all we're ever going to do, how are you going to master the world? Right? If we look at Earth in this third dimensional paradigm as a school, how are you going to graduate if you never master the rules? If you never master how things function here? If you never master what it is to have a really healthy, balanced psyche? Will you? How will you ever reach your maximum potential as a human on this planet if you're too afraid to take the understandings that you've gained and actually apply them in your life? Well, you won't. You won't. And, you know, I have to be careful how I speak here, because of course there are those who follow the path of bhakti yoga and they literally, it's like, but even in that space, when your focus is pure love, it comes at a price. And I'm going to take Mother Teresa for that because, Pielian, like your quote, is just perfect for this. Mother Teresa, who said, God break my heart so completely that the whole world falls in. Perfect. That's bhakti all the way. Because it says, I will love so completely that it will completely and utterly break my heart to love. That's what that means. And there are times that you will even witness that in yourself, even if you don't follow a rigid bhakti path, because that's part of the path that I teach is bhakti, absolutely. And you reach a place where you recognize that everything in the ego wants to despise and hate this person. And in the same token, you see that person as God, as yourself, as perfection, right? And there's that battle again, because it takes great will to see what the ego perceives as pure evil and be able to love it despite of what it looks like, right? And there is pain in that. There is pain in that. And then as the heart is, well, the heart is always open. As the constriction around the heart lifts more and more, and especially when it has dissolved out, when it is lifted, and you stand completely vulnerable in a world based in fear and domination and manipulation, and you are completely vulnerable in it, and you have the tear in the eye of the Buddha as a permanent marker of your beingness, ultimate compassion, the highest, absolute highest human emotion, compassion, right? And you live in compassion, your heart will break almost daily because of what you see around you. And it can be absolutely gut-wrenching, right? We watch, I posted something on Facebook the other day concerning, you know, there's all this hullabaloo going on right now about the current U.S. president and all the stuff going on with the NFL players and the way that they're choosing as their right as Americans to protest social injustice, right? And so much focus is placed on this. And now it's, you know, stirring up all this stuff and people saying, of course, they're not patriotic. People saying it's like a, like some kind of a, like they're making some kind of a statement against the military, which is ridiculous, of course. And all this is running. And this is running at a time when if you look at what has been going on this planet, there has been such an unbelievable loss of life in these past couple months between floods and fires all over the world. It's completely heartbreaking. And I posted this thing. I'm like, why are we spending our time arguing over someone's right to protest, which they've been given in our Constitution, and not look at what we need to be doing? We need to come together in compassion as a planet, right? To be there to help each other and to support each other and to do what's needed to do in the face of utter tragedy. Where is our focus? I mean, it's so off kilter, you know, it's just crazy. But if you can't get in your heart, all right, you can't see that. You can't see that. There's an interesting thing scientifically. If you talk to someone who's like, I think she was sociobiologist, I think. Anyway, there's this woman that I was listening to one day. I thought her work was beautiful. And she was saying that if you look at genetically, like DNA markers, that human DNA is programmed to respond to an immediate threat. Meaning if I placed you in a room where you knew you couldn't get out and I threw a poisonous snake in it, you'd freak out, right? And you'd go into fight or flight and your brain would be working a million miles a minute to figure out how to keep yourself alive, do what you needed to do. So figure out a way to get away or figure out a way to get rid of that so I'd be okay. And simultaneously, the human genome or human DNA does not have a marker to be able to have the same response to something it sees as a long-term threat. So climate change, perfect example. Climate change, is it real? You better believe it. Doesn't matter if it's man-made or not. Climate change is real. There's no question about that. Climate change, does it have the potential to wipe us out as a species? Absolutely. Why are we not completely freaked out about this, right? And if you look at that, how long have we known as a species that climate change was definitely coming? Decades, right? Decades, absolutely. And what have we done as a species, right, to either try to rectify what was happening, or if we recognize there was no changing it, to do whatever we needed to do to ensure that the species could survive? Little to nothing seems like it is on my end. I don't know. Of course, I don't know what goes on in places that nobody hears about, but predominantly that's what we're looking at. And so that whole, you know, the Native American, I don't know what tribe it came from, but somewhere in there was a great teaching that, you know, for every decision that needed to be made, that the council of the elders would look, what, three generations out, you know, and is this decision we're making today kind of going to be in the highest good for my children's children's children. And if I can say yes, then it's a good decision. And if I can say no, then we shouldn't be doing it. That's very, very wise, right? But that also comes from a space of an open heart. Because if you can't get into your heart, there's no way you're even going to be able to see that far in the future, much less make decisions based on seeing that far into the future, right? So Pelion, I don't know, I went way off on a tangent. Which is not unusual. So, I'm going to answer that, but we'll go back to what I was saying concerning you, right? And taking this work into the world and doing it from that level. And can I just ask you to kind of speak to that for those who maybe this kind of teaching is very new to them, because they're being taught to kind of continue to go out, 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 out. And I'm saying sometimes you've got to come down, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have to say, so doing processing work is very difficult, but actually walking it out and taking on this fight is hard.
Right.
And I find myself, like every once in a while, I'm like, oh, so exhausted, like, I just get a break. And then it's like, that's not going to happen. Like, you just know it's not going to happen. But you just keep going. Keep going.
So have you noticed in your own journey, as you've spent more time taking the teachings and really grounding them into your life experience, have you noticed that it has made a difference for you?
Yes.
Say not yet.
No, it definitely has made a difference. You know what? I think the biggest difference is that when I first started this whole thing, it was like, take the obvious and you're going to go hard at this one. And then it was like, I started to see, well, I need to fight for that too. And I need to fight for that too. And it was like more and more, it came clear to me how much in the past I had justified and used the teachings to say, or like to say, well, I see the innocence in them, you know, it's,
sure. Yep. Yep.
You know, like, I see where they're operating from. It's okay. It's, you know, it's all good, you know? And so I see so many places where I've justified and used the teachings to not deal with it.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
And I find that there's so much more out there for me to be doing this fight for.
Right. Right. And that's a really, really good point. Like, we can turn that. Well, you know, it's funny. Normally we kind of turn that spiritual ego. I'm going to turn that spiritual denial right now, taking the teachings and using them to literally keep you from doing the thing that you know you need to be doing. Right. And that's such a good point. And so accurate for so many people. It's such an easy out, right? So we're always in our work, we're always looking for what's the benevolent justifier. Those like big words there. But what's the thing I can point to that I can look at it and be like, I can feel good about it. So if I say, like you said, you know, oh, I see the innocence. I can see the innocence in what they're doing. Now I just, you know, put a happy face on this thing that's going on that shouldn't be happening. It's still not okay. Of course you're innocent in it. Of course you are. And of course I can say that the only reason that you function this way is, you know, A, you're locked into karma, and B, the imprinting that you received from childhood has brought you to this space where this is the only way you can function. And of course I can't expect you to function outside of that. But then beyond that, what's a higher teaching? Because there is a higher teaching than even that. And maybe the higher teaching says You have to do what's in the highest good of all concerned. What's in that person's highest good? Seems to me, if they're locked into patterning, it's to be pushed out of their patterning, right? Of course. So is it innocent? Sure. But are you doing them any favors by allowing it to continue? Of course not. Not at all. And you see, that's like, that's where love really shows. And the world cannot see that as love. But you reach a certain point, and that's all you can see that as, right? I'm giving you an opportunity to free yourself from something that is tethering you to the reincarnational cycle. When most people won't give you that option, I'm actually going to bring it to your door, right? So you're doing your work because you're saying, I've got to be strong and I'm going to fight, even though I don't want to, but I'm going to. And at the same time, you're giving the other person opportunity, right? That's as benevolent as it gets, right? It truly is. But we hide behind what we consider conceptually to be benevolent as far as what the world says is good. Oh, don't make a ruckus about it. It's no big deal. Just let it go. Let it go. That's one of the, you know, most overused teachings out there. Because is it true that part of your spiritual path requires you to quote unquote let it go? Of course. But is it true that that needs to be the overriding thing that you function from in your daily life? Oh, not even close. Not even close. Now, the one spot where it's always accurate is that we aren't here to attach to any outcome, right? So to let go of the attachment to outcome is always true. Always true. When being viewed from a spiritual perspective, right? If you're just functioning at the level of the world, that's not necessarily true, right? Would it have been, you know, good or beneficial if Steve Jobs had functioned from that when building Apple Computer? No, because he needed to be attached to the outcome of what he was doing because that was what he was here to do, right? Build a dynasty. He'll bring new technology in and do all this stuff. And yeah, he was highly attached to how it moved. And that was necessary for the time, right? But he wasn't at the time functioning at the level of a spiritual seeker either. And for those who would be listening to this, that's where you're attempting to function from. So we have to stay in alignment with what teachings are valid and pertinent to us, given where we are on our path. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. And it's really valuable to see that because the teaching you received yesterday, not literally, figuratively speaking, is not necessarily accurate for you today. And the teaching you will receive today will not necessarily be accurate for you tomorrow. Right? And so part of the dance of awakening is to learn to stay very vigilant about where you're at in your process. Now, that's not, it's easier said than done, right? Because there's no one out there saying to you, hey, you're at mile marker 4 in a 10-mile run, right? There's no one who's going to do that for you. However, you do know where you started from and you do know where you're at today, right? And you can still, and you can see places that you fall short in your journey now. Like, oh, you know, I still attach to this one trigger. It keeps coming. And every time it comes, I jump on it. Right. And so you can see that's a level where you're not there yet. So you do have a little bit of a benchmark in place. Right. So it's really, really important. And especially if, you know, I really encourage my personal students to not engage in other teachings because it's confusing. Pick a path and stick with it. Right? until it's run its course and it's time to move on to something else. But don't attempt to juggle multiple paths because it's going to confuse the heck out of you. It gives mind so much to work with, so much to build doubt around, right? The questioner loves that kind of stuff. And let's face it, with the internet and YouTube and everything, it's it's so seductive. It's like so easy to just jump on and, ooh, there's a thing about ascension, or, ooh, here's a thing about the mystery schools, and, ooh, here's, you know, whatever it is. And it's so easy. And even when you're on a path, it's very easy to be influenced by other things that you hear, even if you're not conscious that it is influencing you. It still does. Because especially when you're doing the level of work that we do at the Kamara Center, the mind is storing every piece of information it gets, looking for something that it can utilize against this work down the road. I promise. Oh boy, do I promise. Happens to everybody, right? Because this is the work that it literally can take you all the way. It can take you all the way. And the ego knows that, right? The lower mind understands what's going on with it because it sees everything that's running. And of course, if you succeed here, you know, the you falls away. So does the ego as you want that to happen? No, not at all. So it'll play the game. But at some point along the path, something kicks in and it wants to create doubt for itself so that it can give it an out. Right? It can give it an out. And maybe that out is, oh, that guide doesn't know what she's doing. Or, you know, those teachings are inaccurate because, you know, because she said I should fight. But Advaita says it's about non-dualism and Buddhism says walk the middle path. Where does fighting fall into that? That she must not know what she's talking about, right? So from that person's perspective, is it right? Well, sure. I guess if you want to look at it from that space, of course. That's fine. So stay there, right? Stay at that level. If that's where you're comfortable, stay there and stay there the next lifetime and then the next lifetime, right? For as many times as you feel like going around before you're willing to fully invest yourself in the ultimate awakening. Because of course there are awakenings all along the path, but for the ultimate, you know, literally, and for most people, when you found it, as far as your path goes, you recognize it. You know it's, even if you walk away from it, you'll know that that was it. That was the path, right? Maybe I'm not ready this time, but that was it. Or I know I'm not ready and I know I'm not going to make it this time, but I'll stick with it to the best of my ability, right? And if I come back, I come back, and then I'll find it again because you're going to, if you leave this lifetime, forgive the language, but quote unquote unenlightened, then you're going to come back, but you'll come back at the same level you left at, right? So chances are if you do this work now for this lifetime and you don't make the leap this lifetime, you'll do it next time because you'll be so close, you know, after doing this level of work, especially for, you know, most of my students are in their 30s or so. And so that's a good chunk of lifetime that you're going to be really invested in, you know, unlearning all of the stuff that the lower mind has picked up along the way. All right. What else? How are we doing time-wise? We're good? Yes? Can you give me a marker or something?
We've got about 12 minutes left.
Okay. All right. Rashonda, do you have any question or any comment on anything that we've spoken about?
The processing work. Is I'm so agreeing with PLN. How you say it? Plan PLAN. There we go. I'm agreeing with her about the processing work, and I just as you're talking, taking that in of the process for myself. You know, when seeing how those things come up constantly, daily, and just observing the lower mind and those things that have came up and my habits I've had to let go. And also, I love how you are so saying, telling her to fight. And it's funny to hear her saying for her fight to get out of her thing. And mine is be still. Cause I was
right.
Cause I was wild out. So mine is opposite, like peace. What, you know, those things. So, but I like, even the point you're making where the levels that we are, because it's not even about what you're doing, it is coming out of your pattern. That's why it's so unique what you do, because it's different for all of our, you know, our imprints, you know, the individual dream or experiences or whatever you want to say. So I love the point you make that some may not get it because it's not generalized. It is, it's really about your walk and your life. And so it is unique to you. So what she needs is, or what you're giving is for that to kind of shake up that paradigm and get out of that program. And another may need something else. So I really appreciate that. Cause like I said, I could see, yeah, I need to sit down because I'm patterned to go at it. So right. Come out of it so I can see, observe, breathe in inside and, you know, and do my work. So I appreciate just hearing that and where you're coming from. And I completely understand where you're, you know, what you're sharing. So, you know, those understandings, it is a different type of work. It really is. And even as you're talking, coming out of just religious mindsets that we have to do this work, because there's so much tradition and rituals attached to things. And so this work takes you out of all of that.
Yes.
It really, really does. And so it's just, it is unique, and it is very, but it works. It's beyond my words. It is very helpful to come out of all these patterns and lies and stories that we've told ourselves we do together and individually. So it's just, it's very powerful work.
Well, thank you for that. That's great. So I will just say, and it's not to say, I always have to, it's so funny, I have to like do this double talk all the time because I'm always assuming that people will hear one side of, hear what I'm saying, and then of course make assumptions. Because I said it this way, they assume something about the opposite. So even when like you're speaking to all the, within religion, within the world, like the ritual and the dogma, that kind of thing, and that this goes beyond all of that, like it's not needed. It's not needed, of course. However, and there's my, I have to put that in. However, there's nothing wrong with it either, right? The only place where it becomes a problem is if you're attached to it. And this is true of every single step of your journey from beginning to end, right? It's the same thing. You will pick up a teaching and you will live by that teaching. You will attach to that teaching. You understand? You do. You attach to it. You have to, because how else are you going to live by it and walk it out if you aren't even attached to it, right? So you attach to it. But then you move into the place where it's like, so here's the attachment. Here's the teaching. Here's the test. Yeah. And maybe the test has failed, so you continue on until the next test. At some point, here's the test. You pass. Yay. You know, another level of initiation. You pass the test. Now you're at a new benchmark, and now you're functioning at a new level. Well, guess what happens in order for you to be ready to move to the next test? You got to let go of your attachment to that last teaching. You see? And this is what happens over and over and over again. Because ultimately, in order for consciousness to completely reawaken to itself, every attachment has to be dropped and dissolved, every single one. And boy, that's a big list, right? Some easier than others. The attachment to the body is enormous. It's enormous. It's not enough to mentally say, well, yes, I know I'm spirit and I'm, you know, I'm spirit having an experience through a body. Well, that's great to say it, but to integrate it, right, to the level where it is your experiential reality is a completely different thing. Just a completely different thing. Because you'll still likely get hurt and feel victimized by the pain. That only happens if you're attached to the body. That only happens when you're attached to the body. Outside of that, there can be pain, but there won't be victimization, right? There won't be any conceptual thing that goes, oh, I must have done something wrong. That's karmic payback. I broke my arm, right? That's attachment. So if we think it's easy, and many people do, it seems like, oh, non-dualism, easy, right? All I have to do is say polarization is, you know, wrong and coming to the middle is right. So I'm just going to work to really kind of watch my tongue and be less judgmental, and that should be enough. Oh, yes, and remind myself daily that this isn't real. Okay, that's a good start. But there's so much more after that, so much more. Don't forget, the mind is the thing running all of it. It's running all of it. And if you can't grow to the point in your own journey where you are capable of going in and dissecting every little tiny nuance of the mind, you will not walk out, because the mind is so subtle and so good at what it does. It'll pick up identifications that you later, when you actually see it, you'll be like, oh my gosh, like, where did that come from? I had no idea. I thought I beat that a long time ago, and it snuck back in. I mean, I never even saw it coming, right? And any seeker who's been at this level of work for any amount of time has had that experience. I did, Peely and shaking her head. I did that work. I processed that out. I did a whole thing, and I felt the lifting, and everything shifted. And 2 years down the road, you'll be like, oh my God, like I'm back in that space again. Okay, that's fine. It just means you didn't get all of the matrix of that, you know, web of identification, that's all. So it's time to go in, pull out more threads, because the deeper you go, so you've got this, say it's like a, you know, a ball of yarn, but that ball of yarn on the outside is made out of thicker cable, and then toward the inside, it's finer thread. So in the beginning of your work, you're pulling at thick cables. They're pretty easy to navigate. You get down toward the center, and it's super fine silk thread. It gets tangled really easily, and that's a whole other level of work, right? That's why you don't start out there. It takes, you know, you're honing your skills to be able to navigate consciousness. That's not a minor thing, right? That's not a minor thing. So anybody, I mean, I give the greatest respect to anybody even attempting this level of work. Because it is not easy. It is not easy. And it's not a surprise to me as a teacher. While I wish there were hordes of people lining up to do this level of work with us, I'm not surprised that the group stays relatively small. Yeah. And for every, you know, let's say for every 10 who come on, I'm lucky if I can retain one in the long term, because it's so challenging. It is so challenging. So for anybody listening to this, you know, for those with me and anyone who will hear it later, kudos to you if you're trying to navigate this path the way that we teach it at the Kamara Center, because it's hard. It'll challenge everything. Hardest work you'll ever do. I guarantee that. Childbirth is nothing compared to this. All right. I've had 3 without drugs. That's nothing compared to this. Oh, you know, and it's so funny because I always say to my students, and for Peely and Rashonda, both of you have heard me say this, you know, the work will literally bring you to your knees. And I have a student that just contacted me recently who has done a certain level of work and had been on kind of a hiatus, let's say, and for, let's say, a year. And contacted me again recently, and the subject line of the email was, guess what? On my knees. I went, oh yeah, I'm not surprised about that. Because that's the journey. The journey is that for every true seeker, I mean a true seeker, for everyone, regardless of what path you're following, but for any path that's really, you know, worth its weight, it will bring you to your knees. It has to, right? Because that's the point. The point is the ego. I mean, how do you reach true humility when a person functions from a self-righteous ego? it has to be brought to its knees over and over again, right? Now, it doesn't mean it's all the time, but for anybody who has done a certain amount of this level of advanced work, you know, if you try to step away from it and just kind of reintegrate with the world, it doesn't work. You know too much, right? And that's what I was saying to this person. At this point, I mean, I'm not surprised at all that you're experiencing what you're experiencing. Your whole outside world was just collapsing. And it's because you tried to do something you just can't do anymore. Now, remember, like, you think of it this way. So what we're doing is mystery school teachings. That's what we're doing. This is ancient, ancient off-planet teaching that I'm bringing forward. Stuff that's been held secret for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. There's a reason, because humanity wasn't ready for it, right? Even now, obviously, most of humanity still isn't, but there are some who are here who are ready. So we're being given an opportunity to bring the teachings forward. But if you look back to the traditions of the mystery school, if someone was initiated into a mystery school, regardless of where it was or which one it was, because there were loads of them, let's say we'll take it back to Egypt because that's where I'm most closely aligned. So if we go to the Egyptian mystery schools, once you entered, you didn't leave, right? I mean, at a certain point in your initiation process, you went into that sarcophagus and you either came out enlightened or you were dead, right? That simple. You're either coming out enlightened and having transcended the need to be here, or you will not make it. And what was it in the book Initiation, right? Where she fell, and when she fell in that lifetime, because she had such advanced knowledge, such advanced understandings, she had integrated stuff so deeply that at the point where her consciousness fell, what was it, 2,000 years that she was in literal, fully conscious, but in the void for 2,000 years, not being able to move, but being fully conscious. That's like a big deal, yeah. Right? And this is an aspect that, like, teachers don't talk about this. And I think probably because it's scary when you think of it that way, because sometimes if you knew, maybe you wouldn't even kind of join the path. But even at a certain point, when you find out later and your teacher says to you, you can't go back now. There's no going back now. If you go back now, you're going to fall deeper than you were when you started. And you're like, oh, crap. I didn't want to know that, right? Because wouldn't it have been easier just to continue to be ignorant? Just keep recycling and just be ignorant. But of course not. So the divine in you always has the inner fire to keep pushing forward, right? In its evolution to continue the process of awakening, of course. But there are those moments, and I can speak to that very personally. I remember recognizing very clearly, like, there was no going back. At a certain point, you just know it. Like, I've seen so much now, like, literally you're going out into public and you can't turn the observer off even if you wanted to. So the observer's always catching, oh, there's a patterning there, and there's a victim, and there's a savior over there, and there's, you know, I can see this and I can see that, and it's always running everywhere. And so the thought of how would you just go rejoin the world is ridiculous, right? It's, you just can't. How are you going to turn that off? And imagine how difficult it becomes in the world when you can't turn that off, but you're trying to live like a quote-unquote normal person again, right? It just doesn't work. So once you start, and this is why I tell people right at the very, very beginning of their journeys, like, this really will be the hardest work you've ever done. Are you sure you want to do this? Yeah. Because of that. And I think a lot of people still take it lightly, even though you're telling them flat out, this will be the hardest work you've ever done. I think there's something in there that goes, oh yeah, you know, right? The ego is, yeah, I can handle that. No big deal. Can't be that bad. Yeah, until you start coming up against those things that really do push you. And they get harder, and simultaneously, they're kind of not harder. By the time you hit the ones that are truly difficult to navigate and walk through, you're detached enough that it doesn't feel like personal suffering anymore. it's a hard choice, right? Because now you're making conscious choices. The patterning isn't making the choice for you. You're making the choice. And so there is sometimes some wrestling that goes on there from the space of peeling in. You could speak to that because you're that's what you're in, right? Consciously, now you're making choices because you can see all of it clearly. And it's like, all right, so what am I going to do today? And so the patterning says, please do this because this is what we're used to. And then the other side goes, no, no, you're not going to do that. So, you know, pull up your bootstraps and get to work. it's time to forge ahead. And then the ego is going, please no, 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 no. And you're like, yeah, no, we're going to do this. And so from that place, it's hard, you know, as PLN spoke to earlier, you know, it is hard, definitely. But it's not personal suffering the way you have thought of it before, you know, where you would just be, life is terrible and just poor me. I mean, that's personal suffering. I am the perpetual victim. Outside of that, when you're making conscious choices and you're up against having to make a choice that's difficult, it could be, you know, pardon the way I'm going to say this, but it's just more kind of like, yeah, this sucks. Right? It's just, this really kind of sucks that I have to make this decision. But it's okay. It's okay. And it doesn't alter your sense of yourself or anything any more than that. You just know what you have to do and you move forward in doing it. So, okay. So I guess we're going to wrap it up for tonight. We'll go into meditation and thank you very much for being with me tonight. We'll do some clearing work while we're meditating and we'll see you next week again for something. Thank you.
You are divine.